This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Nataka nisikie Watanzania wote walioko hapa sasa hivi. Tunapiga mara 10 yote. Samata. Twende.
Samata. Samata. Samata.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
One last chance if it drops right. Horse helps it on to Tyrone Mings and Konsa! Ezri Konsa strikes gold for Aston Villa!
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Thank you for joining us for episode 97. Joining me, as per usual, Mr. Chris Budd.
Hello.
And we have brought him back from exile, Mr. Max Stokes of Villa on Tour. Welcome back.
Hello. It's been a while, but I'm back.
First time in 2020, is it not?
Yeah, I think it must be, yeah.
Did you get all the Christmas presents that you wanted?
Yeah, I think so.
He's been raiding the January sales.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Villa. They've picked up a few, you know, more wins. That's all I wish for Christmas, just Villa to pick up some form. So, and they have, to be fair. So,
I mean, I was looking back on my Instagram, on My Old Man Said, over like the last couple of Christmases, and I always put up like the token, all I want for Christmas is 9 points from these three games. And they never give me 9 points.
We're always crap over Christmas, David. We know this.
I always get sold short by the claret and blue Santa. Anyway, it's good to have you back. Just before we get into the show, I just want to do a quick shout out to the show sponsor, Beer 52. I know quite a few of the listeners have taken up their offer of a box of 10 free beers. You also get a snack in there and a magazine telling you all about the amber nectar that you have been sent. That's 10 craft beers. And all you've got to do is pay the price of postage, which is $4.95. Normally, the Beer 52 introduction offer is 8 beers. And also the postage is £1 more. So because you listen to the show, you get an extra 2 free beers and you save a quid on the postage. It's well worth ordering, and then you can cancel at any time. And just in case you need to celebrate Villa getting out of the bottom three, or hopefully next Tuesday getting to Wembley. But anyway, thank you for all those people who have signed up and enjoyed a drink on us. Right, coming up in the show, escape from the bottom three. We look back at Brighton and Watford games. We spoke about Watford in detail in the extra show we crammed in a couple of days ago. So we'll look at the relegation picture more generally. Also look at the January window, as well as Samatta coming in. There's been some outs as well. We also look at the latest update on the Rasmussen diagram, which I'm now calling it, which is the chart to see how we're progressing in terms of the relegation picture at the end of the season. And we'll finish off with the return of a Scott Hogan touch count battle between Mr. Budd and Mr. Stokes. Before we hand over a platform to Mr. Budd and his Villa Week and a Villa Minute, just a few little Villa snippets that have been happening since last we spoke. Villa have signed Jack Grealish's replacement. Well, that's what I'm calling him. Louis Barry from Barcelona, who reteams with Academy manager Mark Harrison, who you will know we got from West Brom. I think it was in the summer, wasn't it?
At the end of last season. Up.
So Baggies fans are going to be really over the moon that as we've poached both their academy manager, who had them punching well above their weight in this in the youth. Does he do under 23s and below? Is that his remit?
He oversees the whole of the academy system, doesn't he? So it's it will encompass the academy, the under 23s, and then all the age groups down.
And he's managed to poach from Barcelona. I think it was, he was his main prodigy, wasn't it, from West Brom. So Louis Barry used to be at West Brom, went to Barcelona, didn't really get going at Barcelona, and then Villa obviously swooped in because I'm sure Harrison's been, kept in touch.
Well, the guy that signed him apparently left, didn't he? There was a bit of a restructure at La Masia, so apparently there was a bit of behind-the-scenes stuff going on, although he was actually settling over there. The landscape changed, so he's coming back to his boyhood club.
Yeah, Barry's a Villa fan, as is all his family. That's why I'm calling him the Grealish prodigy.
And an equally questionable haircut.
Exactly. I prefer Grealish's, to be honest. I even prefer Grealish's highlights.
Grealish doesn't have earrings either.
Yeah, but, when Grealish was 16, he was looking a bit... he looked super baby-faced when he was 16.
He looked about 12.
Not as baby-faced as Max looked when he was 16, but that's another...
Well, a year ago.
That's another matter. And in other news, here's a chance for my dyslexicness on names to kick in again. Enny Aluko has the famed Chelsea, Juventus, and she was an England centurion, wasn't she, for England women's team.
Yeah.
Has joined Villa, and I thought this was a great move. She's joined as sporting director, having retired from football, it was only last week or a couple of weeks ago, which is really a statement of intent to push the Aston Villa women's team on another level. I think they're unbeaten this season. They should get promoted.
They're six points clear at the top, aren't they? The women's second tier.
Yeah, because, I mean, they've been stuck in a limbo over the last 5 years. I mean, we used to have somebody who would interview the manager and, the players there. And I think this is the time of Dr. Tony. And they were always told, it's almost like promises that never materialised. What's a false promise called?
A lie?
A lie. That's one way of saying it, Chris. But we'll stick with that. I like that. But yeah, so I think they kind of... they got to like the edge of a cliff where they hoped they were going up. And then when they got to the edge, it was like, it's just a downward slope. So they were stuck in limbo. But the new regime that's come over and taken over Aston Villa, the new owners, and I think Purslow as well, are very much behind getting Aston Villa women's team into the top tier. And Aluko, obviously, she's probably my favourite in terms of, women's pundits that obviously materialise now of the lot. So, I mean, she's, lawyer by trade. I think she will be, very much involved in the business side of restructuring.
Well, she's a proper asset. And between the women's side of the club and the academy, you're looking at generally starting to build a culture of excellence from top to bottom throughout the club, which is exactly what you want.
Yeah, because it's been almost run as an afterthought before, but it needs to be. If you're going to succeed with any team, it's got to be taken seriously. And so this will put them front and centre. And also, I kind of like her because she's not afraid to kind of speak out against the establishment. I mean, there was obviously that kind of ding-dong against... was it the England manager she accused of being racist?
Yeah, I think so. And something like that. Yeah, there's been a few... I think it was during the Women's World Cup, wasn't it? There was a few outbursts. But I like it.
Yeah. I've noticed she's been a victim of, like, trolls because... she had a biography out, and if you look on the Amazon reviews, there's all these like, I wouldn't even light my fire with it, or I wouldn't even use it as a doorstop, like one star, and it's like, yeah, these fuckers haven't read it, they haven't even bought it.
Who goes trolling on Amazon?
Well, I think there's obviously an agenda there. Just wait until Stokes brings his book out. He'll also receive this kind of blind
coming
troll
soon.
The Vought memoirs.
Diary of the Vot.
Ooh.
Right, and the only other thing really to report is there's still murmurs of a second striker incoming. Obviously, Ali's Samatta is in town, and we're all eagerly waiting to see him make his bow at Villa Park, hopefully against Leicester. I think that's the only thing we really need in January. I think we'll stick with what we've got, and if we can get another striker, I think that would be a decent enough January window, really.
I think if you could buy confidence and consistency, that would be the thing to buy.
Yeah, agreed. Right, is it time for a Villa Minute?
I think it is.
Oh my God. Right, let me get this stopwatch on. Sorry, I've got to find it. Right, are you ready?
I am.
I haven't even read this, so I'm hoping it's a good one. Right, 3, 2, 1, go.
Still strikerless Villa go to Brighton, aiming to avenge the 6-1 thumping by Man City. They find themselves a goal down at half-time after a disjointed first-half performance. Substitute Douglas Luiz sets up a thumping finish from Grealish for a superbly crafted equaliser and a much-improved second-half performance. Villa are the better side and good value for a point away from home. The Samatta transfer is confirmed, but not in time for him to play in the huge 6-pointer against Watford at Villa Park, where Villa start well, with lots of possession before Troy Deeney scores against the run of play as Villa go in a goal down at half-time. Watford spend 90 minutes time-wasting. Super sub Luiz comes on again and changes the game, coming off the bench to score the equaliser. In a frantic finale, all three centre-backs combine with a long-range Reina punt up the field, won by Hawes, flicked onto Mings and lashed home with the last kick of the game by Ezri Konsa. To pandemonium in the Holt End. Villa win 2-1, justice and karma are done, and Villa go up to 16th in the league and out of the bottom three. Enya Luko arrives as director of football for the Villa women. Villa confirm the signing of Louis Barry, and they now prepare for Leicester in the second leg of the semi-final.
1 minute.
Boom.
Boom. Anything to add, Max Stokes? What was the highlight of your Villa week?
It's got to be the Konsa / Mings goal, and then the whole sort of uproar. Do you see all the interviews on Sky Sports and things? Like Konsa collapsing to the floor.
Yeah.
That was brilliant. That was I thought that was absolutely class. But yeah, it's got to be that, no doubt.
And I quite liked Mings being interviewed where they said, so what have you got to say about where you could have been sent off? Nothing. Brilliant.
If you listen to the last My Old Man Said podcast, episode 96.5, you'll find all that shit in the intro. We've just outed Bud. He obviously hasn't listened to that show.
I actually have. I thought I was great. Sorry. I don't know about you.
Right, let's get into the 3 points so we can get into the meat and gravy of the Villaverse. First up, interesting tie this weekend. The Blues have the dubious pleasure of playing as the away team at their home ground. They travel to St Andrews, or whatever it's called nowadays, for the FA Cup tie against Coventry. I mean, I can't imagine Villa ever being the away team at Villa Park in any context.
We were once, though, and I went.
Oh, when was that?
In January 96, we played Gravesend and Northfleet in the FA Cup third round. And because their ground didn't fulfil the regulations for an FA Cup tie, they switched the tie to Villa Park. So we beat them 3-0 and we played in the blue AST away kit and won 3-0.
Sorry, what year was this again?
That was January 96. So we got to the semi-final that season. It was the same year we won the Coca-Cola Cup.
I went to a West Midlands Police Independent Advisory Group meeting, which I pop into. So they're obviously talking about the policing for the Blues Coventry. These meetings are quite good because you get a real fly on the wall look at how the police kind of operate and how they approach these things. And you can obviously throw in your 2p and, you know, either through suggestions or criticism or whatever. It's kind of an open forum, which is kind of unique. Blues have got 9,300 and Coventry have got 9,600. They've basically drawn a line diagonally across the ground, and that's how it's kind of split. There's some interesting things happening in the meeting. I think one time they said Umbro, the other time they said Hummel, but they're sponsoring this football immunity, where in one or two of the pubs they're going to do these, you know, where you have those cardboard frames to take selfies, where
rubbish,
those type of things. But the idea is if you take a picture with an opposition fan, you get a free beer, free pint.
Jesus.
You don't have to say what you do with the said pint glass in the photo.
I don't think there'll be any glasses. I think it'd just be plastic pints. But I think they did it before. I can't remember what fixture it was, but I think they gave away almost 3,000 pints or something.
Sounds like the kind of thing Leicester would do.
Yeah, or Fulham.
Oh, yeah, with a nice slice of cheesecake.
But yeah, maybe they'll... it's kind of an interesting idea to... because one of the things you kind of want the police to do is police on behaviour of, you know, on the day rather than reputation, if you know what I mean, like rather than kettling it off because of two rivals or having, in the case of the Coventry and... Swansea game where they have, was it facial recognition?
Yeah.
And all kinds of over, you know, zealous policing, DNA sprays and all this kind of shit. It's better to try to create a better atmosphere or a more, let's say, cordial atmosphere. And then obviously the policing adjusts to that and everybody can kind of enjoy their day. But they were joking. Well, they were saying that there shouldn't be much of a problem, but the real problem comes if there's a replay and then Coventry are the away team, because Coventry's trouble element really don't bother with home games. They go to away games. So suddenly they won't go to the first leg, but they'll go to the replay. So I suggested they should have the replay at Villa Park, just so everybody can join in and join in the fun.
I'd send them all to Bescot. I don't want them at Villa Park.
Well, you don't, but it'll be like a Roman Colosseum, won't it? It'd be throwing some lions and stuff. We don't have to turn up. We just make sure nobody leaves alive. Anyway, before I get arrested, let's go on to point number two. I don't know how I feel about this, but Sheffield Wednesday are issuing 10-year season tickets on the promise that it will be valid for 10 years after the next promotion back to the Premier League. Well, you're going to be waiting a while there, boys. But you pay up front, like, is it $6,500?
Yeah, $6,500. And I think they said it's valid potentially up to like 15 years, but it could potentially be like 25 years, they said, the actual length of your ticket. So the longer it takes, so the longer it takes for Sheffield Wednesday to go up, essentially the longer the ticket will be valid for.
And they've kind of made these promises that if a new owner comes in, I mean, this when I started to read all the, when I read the small print, it's like, no, it'll still be valid when a new owner comes in. Like, is this like, let's get as much money as we can stockpiled and then
run.
Get the fuck out of here. I mean, they are merciless in terms of charging the maximum amount for away tickets, as we experience over three seasons. I mean, they're a joke. And when you're when you attack them, their home fans all pipe up and say, oh, well, you know, it's just level of what we pay. And it said, yeah, but you shouldn't be paying. You should be fighting for that. And I think, I don't know, this is taking the piss. I think 10 years... you don't know what happens in your life. You might get a new job, you might move abroad, and
you might not even be here.
It's more likely that Sheffield Wednesday will get relegated, never mind promoted. So
I wonder what happens then, though, if they go down to League One.
Yeah, check the fucking small print, because I don't think they mentioned that. What happens, I mean, there's more chance of them probably going non-league than there is promotion back to the Premier League.
Strange. But I'm sure some people will pay it.
Yeah, but nobody with half a brain.
It's quite strange, isn't it, really, that the price of a 10-year season ticket at Sheffield Wednesday might just about get you a one-year season ticket at one of the London clubs.
Yeah. Anyway, but I'd rather have a 1 year at a London club than 10 years at Sheffield Wednesday, put it that way. Point number three, Chris Budd's ideal away day. I don't know about Max's, but Barcelona had the pleasure of going to Ibiza in the Copa del Rey.
Superb.
Wasn't all one-way traffic, though, was it?
No, Ibiza took the lead. And actually, they should have gone 2-0 up just before half-time. They had an absolute sitter in front of the goal and somehow managed to miss it. And this was against a relatively strong Barca side that had Griezmann and Frenkie de Jong and quite a few other regulars in the side. And they just about scraped through 2-1 with a really late goal.
Do you know what the attendance was by any chance?
It's about 4,500, the Ibiza ground. I know they put up a bit of additional seating as well, so it might have been a bit more.
Like the Wolves.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the best weather that Ibiza offers at the moment, but...
you want to play. If you're going to play them in a cup game, you want it about April or May, don't you? Or ideally in August.
Or a pre-season friendly way.
That'd be mega. In July.
Yeah, I don't know why. Why don't Villa just put in for a pre-season against Ibiza? I mean, what could go wrong?
Two words. Jack Grealish.
Right, before we move on, just want to give a big shout out to the My Old Man Said patrons and those who have signed up in the last few weeks. We relaunched the patrons this year, 2020, so the focus is more on providing you extra podcast content. There's also percentages off if you're one of the top three tiers off merch. And it allows us to be independent and justify putting out more shows. And it allows me to say fuck off to emails that I get from shonky app and betting companies offering me pathetic money, but wanting shout outs of betting companies and wanting me to send them a copy of the podcast so they can use it on their network, which we would get fuck all for. So thank you, all the patrons, just for helping me say fuck off to those kind of leeches. But I want to give a shout out to I'm going to do some now and then some at the end. People who begin, first names who begin with A and J, I'll say the shout outs now are Andrew Shubotham, Adam Diehouse, John Besant, Jenny Birkin, Judy Derbyshire, James Wayhill, Julian de Shira. A massive thank you, and there'll be more shout outs at the end of the show as well. But thank you very much for your support, past, present, and future. Right then, Brighton, Watford, basically getting out the bottom three, where everybody, I think, had that sinking feeling that this is a real relegation battle this season. For real. Max.
Yes.
How did you feel, for a bit of context of where we are now, compare to me the feeling of that injury time winner against Watford to the one we had against, well, the equaliser against Sheffield United when we came back from 3-0 last season?
Pretty similar. I think, you know, the 3-3 last season, it was kind of, you know, a semi-turning point. We were pretty much out of it at that point, mid-table, nothingness in the Championship. And, you know, it was just a bit of a laugh when we were 3-0 down. It was just taking the mick. It was that poor at Villa at that moment. Watford, that was absolutely massive because we simply couldn't afford to, well, lose that game. But even a point wasn't really putting out any statement to the league. And to get the winner over, you know, a very good Watford side that, you know, the last 5-6 games have done very, very well, picked up some massive wins. So to just stop their run.
Yeah, it was their first loss under Mr. Nigel Pearson, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you know, that is literally the epitome of a six-pointer, and for us to get the win there and get out of the relegation zone is absolutely huge.
And the headline was, we're above the Hammers now. I really want to see the Hammers down. Sorry,
they're in free fall, aren't they?
I'd love to see that stadium empty in the Championship.
Jeez. Wickham going dump. To the London Stadium.
Absolute, wow. Absolute dumb.
The teams in the mix seems to swap almost like weekly, because it was a vital win, because you go back 2 weeks ago and you could have said any of the bottom 10 were in the mix, but then teams started to put wins together. Southampton now are looking at Europe rather than relegation as their aim for the rest of the season. Burnley, who we thought we dragged in on New Year's Day when we beat them 2-1 at their patch, have suddenly putting back-to-back victories together, and they've climbed out. So it was vital to peg back Brighton, first of all, with that draw. I mean, if we had lost that, that's another team that would, I think we'd be 4 points away from then if we hadn't. Was it four or five points away?
Yeah, we'd be in a really bad state.
Yeah, I mean, if we had lost to Brighton and Watford, I think we're talking game over, because we'd be down there with the Norwich. But, I mean, Max, what did you think going into the Watford game, and how, I mean, people have, you know, said like only Mings and Grealish really got a proper cheer when they read out the players' names before the game. And there was a kind of a feeling that the tide was turning. I mean, people were saying, you know, Smith out over the last few weeks, which, you know, I thought it's kind of ridiculous, because you've got this situation. It's the same people at the start of the season who said, I'll take 17th, I don't care what happens, I just want to finish 17th, I'll take 17th. Now, what do you expect to happen in a season for your team to finish 17th? Do you think they're going to play amazing football, string wins after wins together, no complaints, and then suddenly you finish 17th? That doesn't happen. You go to hell and back. If you finish in 17th, that means you're going a serious journey where it's not all going to be roses. Your manager's going to be under pressure. So if that's all you want, 17th, then you fucking back him until you get 17th. There's a high potential that you'll be in the bottom three if you're going to finish 17th at some point of the season. So there's this strange psychology going on. And I mean, in terms of your friend group, are you up for the battle, or is there a bit of I don't like the word negativity, but resignation, shall we say, that this might not be a great season? Or
I think you've got to talk about expectations, like you said at the start of the season, just survival. That's what I would have taken. But you know, we're all 100% behind Dean Smith. You know, you, like you said, you can't go through a season, finish 17th, without being, you know, in a proper dogfight. Looking at the table now, there's five teams within 2 points of each other, so it could easily go either way, like towards the end of the season. But I think just got to get behind the players, and if we can, you know, pick up the, it's not going to be pretty going towards the end of the season. It's probably going to be ugly, especially when we play the sides around us. But quite frankly, who cares as long as we stay up, and then, you know, whatever happens in the summer, we can progress and hopefully push on. But like I said, it's not going to be, you know, pretty at all. But if we're picking up these ugly wins, you know, against the sides around us, you know, we've got Bournemouth coming up, just played Watford, Brighton, yeah. Just picking up these scrappy wins and the points where you can, that's just what we've got to be doing. But yeah, it's tough, but we've just got to crack on.
Chris, somebody made a comment on the My Old Man Said website that in terms of the relegation picture, 24 of our 25 points have come against the other eight teams in the bottom nine, and we only have four more of those games left against those eight teams currently in the bottom nine.
Yep.
And he said that's the worry. I mean, how do you approach that? Because I think they come up reasonably soon. And Max obviously mentioned the Bournemouth game on the horizon. I mean, I'll add something to this, but what's your feeling? Do you think we've got to get the business done in these next few months, or is it game by game?
Game by game for me, because the goalposts can change. You know, we could play Liverpool and they've won the title. You could play teams later in the season, you've got nothing to play for, and that's what you want to do. You know, you could be playing mid-table teams, you've got nothing. I know we entertain Palace, I think. We go to Newcastle. Sometimes the games against teams who are right around you is more difficult than teams who've got very little. Like, I look at something like the Man United home game as a huge opportunity for potentially a big win. I look at Tottenham, who are, you know, they're a good side, don't get me wrong, but they haven't got Harry Kane. You have to see that as an opportunity. The fact that we go to Bournemouth, we go to Newcastle, these games have to be seen as opportunities. And I think Smith has already said it a couple of times, and I know he said it this week in his post-match, that his teams traditionally, wherever he's been, have always finished the season better than they started.
Yeah.
And I think this team can. It's that thing of the confidence growing. Everyone believes there's a little bit of momentum going on. And it's just about keeping it going. The fact that we've started to win ugly gives me hope that we can actually take scalps against some of these teams. You know, we've got Arsenal at home. You have to see that as an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, while they're big teams in stature, we've actually played what I would class as the big form teams in the league. You know, you've already entertained Liverpool. You've played Leicester and you've played City all at home. We've gone to City. You know, we've actually got a lot of the what I'd call the really, really difficult ones out of the way, bar Liverpool away. And that could be a dead rubber by the time we go there.
Well, the situation is, what I was going to add is people forget this chap identified these, you know, the bottom nine. But as you've alluded to there, games against West Ham, Bournemouth, Newcastle, they're going to be like, let's say they're the toughest games in my opinion, because if you look at how the table's shaping up, I think the top four is almost a given. So if you fast forward to a couple of weeks, if that top four is established, the rest of the teams are just going to be playing until they get to the beach. So that creates a lot of teams who've got nothing to play for. So there's an opportunity for Villa to start beating, you know, whoever they come up against. And this is a team that's obviously in a transition, it's rebuilding, and it's only going to, well, in theory, is only going to get better. And people like Danny Drinkwater is only going to get better as he gets more games. Samatta is only going to get better as he learns the system, etc. John McGinn pops back. I mean, the only thing I will say about Villa, the main danger is, as long as Mings and Grealish stay fit, I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, because I actually think, similarly to before, I know we've said it numerous times, McGinn needed a rest when he did, but I have a feeling you're going to get him back like a Duracell bunny, because he will not enjoy being on the sidelines. I don't know if you saw the video of him celebrating the Konsa goal with his crutch bouncing up and down on one foot, but he's bang up for it still. And I think we might get a better version of John McGinn when he comes back. He'll be leaner, meaner. He'll have done sort of a little bit of his analysis work in terms of why things weren't quite working in the last few games. I think he'll have his head bang in the right place, and it'll be like a brand new signing.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information application and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah. If you look at the last six games form guides, Villa are now seventh in that league. Watford, I think, were second before we beat them because they're currently fourth.
Well, they'd won five of the last six, hadn't they?
Yeah. So, yeah, they were definitely second to, obviously, the imperious Liverpool. So, you know, I didn't realise that we were that kind of high up. I mean, seventh is where we were, I think I mentioned it, a couple of weeks ago, where if all games finished at 80 minutes, we would be seventh in the league. So we're kind of at least on that form now. I mean, Max, do you feel like we've got a bit of momentum now? I mean, it feels weird because it's only a couple of weeks ago when Manchester City bottled us, literally. But when you look at the form guide, when you look at Bournemouth, West Ham, they're in the bottom of the form guide. These are the teams that seem to be dropping, and they're the ones that we can take advantage of.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you just look at 2020, we've been to, you know, Turf Moor, Burnley, which isn't an easy place to go at all. We've won there, gone to Leicester. I know it wasn't in the league, but we've got a draw there, which is a really good result. Forget Man City, that you know, they can do that to anyone. You know, Watford, we battled through it, got a last minute winner. So all in all, 2020's been decent. But just looking at the table there, I think there's three mini leagues. You've got the top four, and then you've got, you know, fifth down to all the way down to 14th, and then below that it's kind of a scrap between six teams. So, you know, it's going to be really tough. But if we have got momentum, and, you know, we do seem to beat the sides around us.
Yeah.
It's, you know, unfortunate that we haven't got many of those games left, which is why you've got to look at Bournemouth in a couple of weeks and think absolutely massive, massive game. And, you know, it's typical Villa that, you know, Bournemouth have picked up a win in their last game. So they're going to be bang up for it as well.
You're not the first person to say that. Somebody said, typical Villa, we always play teams at the wrong time.
Yeah, they'll probably beat us, Bournemouth. It'll be a typical Villa.
Well, it's happened all season, hasn't it? I mean,
yeah.
You look at West Ham, who are dreadful now. And when we played them at Villa Park, I was really impressed with them. They started the season really well.
They were in second or something, weren't they? It was ridiculous.
Yeah, they started really well. They look pretty spineless at the moment. I look at Newcastle, who are somehow in 14th, 5 points ahead of us, and they were still the worst team I've seen at Villa Park this year. So these teams can all have runs and drops, and I think Newcastle aren't out of trouble. I don't think Burnley are out of trouble. I think Everton will get better. Even someone like Palace could drop.
We beat the teams around us. Newcastle beat the teams like in the top five. It's the way they stay up. But I mean, interestingly, when you look at the table, I mean, you look at Burnley, 13th place, and only four teams, and they're all in the top four, have won more games than Burnley, who have 9 wins. You know, Sheffield United have got 8 wins, Wolves 8 wins, and they're in seventh and eighth place.
And we've won more games than Arsenal.
Yes, and you know, we've got 7 wins. And this is a weird. It's the teams that aren't losing games seem to be, apart from the top four, that's what's determining your league place at the moment. I mean, the only stat that we need to rectify, and that's, I think we're the only team who haven't kept a clean sheet away from home, and that's why we are in 16th as opposed to 4 or 5 places above. We're just, there's a few games that perhaps we could have knuckled down and got a draw from, but I think there's a change in character now. I mean, Max, what do you think about this back three formation? Are you convinced with it yet? I mean, there's still a bit of, we mentioned on the last show, where there seems to be a channel in between either side of Mings that forwards are running and there's been a bit of confusion who should pick up, you know, that man. And we've conceded goals in the crossfire of the hesitancy of marking. But overall, how do you see it playing out? And when Samatta starts, do you think that will help it?
I'd like to think so. I think, like you said, I think the Deeney goal on Tuesday night was a prime example. You've got three centre-halves there and literally no one's near Deeney. He's got a free header. So that, you know, it's not ideal that, but overall, you've got to look at Courtney Hawes, Ezri Konsa, Tyrone Mings don't have a lot of Premier League experience. They're all very young. Well, apart from Mings, he's 26, but it's worked fairly well. I think, you know, it's had its teeth and problems, but it's okay. They're all fairly fast, so the three centre-half things works as well. I think it's good for the full-backs as well. It allows Freddie Gilbert, who's probably our only bit of pace in the side at the moment, apart from Samatta, but we haven't seen that yet. Target's had a few difficult weeks, but, you know, I think it suits him. He's probably, a lot of people say, he's better going forward, so I think it suits the fullbacks as well. So we've got the players for the three at the back. I'd like to see how Samatta works in it. You've got the midfield, Jack Grealish pulling the strings, hopefully Samatta playing on the shoulder of the last defender, which we haven't seen at Villa in a long time. Wesley clearly wasn't that striker who was going to play on the last man and get in behind. We haven't had a lot of pace up front as long as I can remember, really. I think the last one was probably Gabby, the really fast striker we had. So that'd be interesting to see how that sort of works. But no, I'm looking forward to seeing how it works with Samatta and things like this. So it's positive going forward, yeah.
As I highlighted in the last show when we were talking about the Watford game, Target, when he got in position, I think he suffered from us not having a striker in there. So I'm hoping Samatta will actually aid our wing backs and make them productive, because, you know, some of his crosses were going in reasonable areas, but there's just nobody there to that's what they need. They need to know somebody's going to be there, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, you think when Target gets into those positions, unlike Taylor, he just wraps his foot round the ball and delivers. You know, he did one in the first half where he smashed it out for a goal kick and everyone had their head in their hands, but at least he's in the position. And you think, you know, he was instrumental in the second, the equaliser for Luiz, where he got, you know, ran right past Grealish, was the final man, really good drilled sort of cross shot, and obviously it fell to Luiz at the back post. That's where you want to see him, always being that extra man over, and that's what Gilbert's there to do as well.
Yeah. Right, let's move on just to the January window quickly. Obviously, some matters in. We've spoken about him a little bit. I think it's time for a budding linguist segment, since you were... taught our listeners some Spanish last time. I think it's time for a bit of Tanzania culture, just quickly.
Yeah, well, they speak Swahili over there, don't they? So, Mzi Wangu Alisima is my old man said in Swahili. And if he manages to score against Leicester, which we've all got fingers and toes crossed for, we can all shout Ingia Huko Mwag Nagu, which is get in there, my son.
And one thing we don't want to be is what Tanzania refers to in the football context as madman's head. Can you explain that? Can you pronounce it in Swahili?
Kichwa cha Mwendawazimu, which is the Tanzanian equivalent of whipping boys, coined by former President Ali Hassan Mwinyi, lamenting Tanzania's dismal international record. Mwinyi compared the team to a madman who allows barbers to use his head to practice on.
He'll be all right. He's not going to be a madman's head.
Do you know what? He came across, having watched his interview finally the other day, he comes across a really nice guy and someone you kind of want to, you know, you root for to win. He almost has the sort of air of like a young Dwight York about him, that kind of beaming smile, really happy to be here, really, really proud to be representing his country. I think he's a really hungry player.
Yeah, that's the mad thing. The main thing is, I think there is that responsibility of what it means to be in the Premier League and representing his country. It's you know, he's not just there for himself. He's also he'll feel that he's got to deliver to make his country proud. So hopefully that will be in our favour. Speaking of one of our strikers that's gone to another country, old Codgers moved to Qatar. He started off with a hat trick, but get a feeling that any one of us three would have scored a double hat trick, probably against the opposition they were playing. But he never had a future. I mean, Dean Smith pretty much spelt it out and said he wasn't good enough for this level, which has been the consensus for pretty much every other manager, because he's never ever, nobody's ever fancied him in the Premier League. And you could see why, even though like he scored around 20 goals, I think it was 19, right, for Bristol City. They finished just a couple of places above the relegation zone in that season. When he scored the similar amount for us, we were in the bottom half. And it just shows that, okay, if he scores one goal in a game, there's potential that if he wasn't so selfish and could pass it, we may have scored two or three and actually, you know, won games that perhaps we drew. So I could, you know, when we used to do this podcast when we were in the Championship, you just thought, yeah, even though he can score, he also holds you back as a team. And that was something we always complained about. Were you sorry to see him go, Mr. Stokes?
Not really. I think it said a lot that Dean Smith was prepared to let him go before we'd even got Samatta in and leave us with literally no strikers. I think that, you know, said volumes. And the interview we did, you know, when Codger left, it said a lot. You didn't fancy him at all. I think that Fulham game in the FA Cup summed it up perfectly. He scored, but he's just, his work rate and his movement, he just looks lazy, he looks half-arsed, and you could tell that he knew that he wasn't going to be at Villa in the long term, and he just wanted to get out of there as soon as possible. And if, you know, that's his mentality, do you really want him at the club? But I'm happy with, you know, Samatta. Chris said in the interview, he looks, you know, he speaks really well, seems like a nice guy, seems like he's got a bit of you know, personality about him, so look forward to seeing what he can do.
Yeah, if we got 2 to 2.5 million from Codger, from our friends in Doha, then happy days. Also, Kalinic has gone out on loan to Toulouse. You know, obviously they've seen something, as Smith saw in Codger, where he just thought, yeah, that's not for us. But you know, obviously no complaints there, because Pepe Reina came in and is doing very well. Just quickly, the Ramussen table, if you have been paying attention, it's we've called it the relegation or not table. One of the mom's patrons sent it in, Christopher, not Christopher 1, this is Christopher 2. And it's basically tracks where, if you haven't seen it yet, historically 42 points has seen any team safe in the Premier League. Teams have survived on 36 though, so it sees how we're tracking against those two marks. So anywhere in between 42, 36 is you're in the lap of the football gods there in terms of survival. But if we hit 42, then it's happy days. At the moment, we're tracking 2 points off being on course for 42. So we're in the zone where potentially we would stay up anyway, because we're above that. We're probably tracking for about 40 points, which is also traditionally good enough to stay up. But obviously there's been the odd season where it hasn't been enough. So I just wanted to give you that update before we get into the Scott Hogan Touch Count Challenge. It's back.
First one of the year.
First one of the year. That's why Max has been saying, sorry, I'm not coming on the show unless you have a Scott Hogan touch
count. He's been reading up as well.
And I've been like, sorry, mate, but no, we're not having it. He said, well, you know, see you later, mate.
I'm buzzing.
Dan Rogers, we've stripped him of the title because he's AWOL. So should we get, I think we're offering up the title to the winner of this.
Ooh.
And
it's not a one-off, is it? We're starting again. We start afresh.
What do you mean?
New year, new Hogan touch count meter.
Yeah, new title. Just historically for our listeners, who's fared the best out of when you two have clashed previously?
Not me. I normally do really bad.
Yeah, not him. And then I started really well against Rodgers, and then I think he started cheating because he just started flattening everyone.
Pulling out miracle wins. Yeah, it's a bit suspicious, isn't it? If you're new to the Scott Hogan Touch Count Challenge, basically it used to be all about Scott Hogan. How many touches had he had in a game? I don't think he plays football anymore. I mean, there's been no real sightings of him on a football pitch.
No, he's a cushion, isn't he?
Yeah, so what happens is we have the best of three rounds, first one to two. And in those rounds, you have, first of all, there's two rounds of guesses. You guess how many touches he's had, or obviously if he's not playing, whatever the scenario is and the player is that I throw up. In the third round, if nobody's got it yet, I will drop in a little clue if one is necessary, i.e. nobody's even close. And after that, the closest one takes the round. Right, who's going first?
Go on, Max.
Go on then.
Ooh. Very generous. Right then, so I thought we'd give this a bit of context since Hogan's not playing anymore. I don't know if he's retired or what the situation is there. We're going to have a look at old Ali Samatta, who's now a Villa player. It's Samatta touch count. So he played Liverpool twice in the Champions League this season. At home in Ghent, they got pumped 4-1.
Ouch.
Interestingly, he was playing, I think I mentioned this on the last show, he was playing behind the front man, more as a false nine or a supporting striker. He played the whole game. He got three shots one on target, won four aerials. These are clues. So, Max, how many touches did he have in the whole game against Liverpool at Ghent when they got beat 4-1 in their first Champions League meeting with the Scouse?
I do actually remember watching this game. I did watch it.
Was you subconsciously counting?
I wish. Let's think about this. I'm going to say 23. That's quite low. No, yeah, we'll go 23.
23, first guess from Stokes. Mr. Bird?
27.
Bird goes up 27. Second round, Mr. Stokes?
I will go with 30.
Ooh, going up. Mr. Bird, next guess?
29.
Ooh, right, sir. Nobody's even close at the moment. You're at least, let's say, put it this way. I can't say a number to give you too much of a clue, but you're at least five out, at least.
Oh, do I go again then?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, they didn't have a lot of the ball in that game. I'm going to go up. It might be a big mistake, but I'm going to go 38.
38 from Mr. Stokes.
What was Max's first guess?
Ooh, you should be writing these down.
Don't tell him. Don't tell him.
23, wasn't it? 23. Oh. I'm going to say like 16.
Ooh. Well, 42. Yes! Stokes 1-0.
Wow.
Get it.
32 touches when they lost 4-1.
Yeah.
I tell you what, now that's a good sign for Villa.
It's a good sign, everybody.
42 touches and they got spanked 4-1 at home.
So this is him playing slightly behind. So I think you'd have been playing on the tip of the midfield at the halfway line, trying to close them down. That's what I would imagine.
Oh, no. That means he's going to start taking the ball off Mings. Get in the box.
When they played, right, second round, we are now off to Anfield. Who's starting here? Chris, I think it's your...
He scored, didn't he, Anfield?
He scored. Liverpool won 2-1. He scored. He won three aerials in this... he's always winning aerial. I mean, if you win three or four, that's decent for a forward. I mean, Hawes, for example, is winning 9-11 as a defender when we're under pressure. But this time he played as a front two. I think they played a 3-5-2, pretty similar to Villa, but obviously using two forwards instead. Played all the full game. So how many touches did he have?
30.
30 first stab.
I will go with 26.
Bit different than the old Scott Hogan.
Feels strange.
I know, yeah. Getting a nosebleed with these numbers.
Big numbers are being used.
32.
Ooh, Chris has edged his bets going up a bit.
I will go with 36.
36. You're kind of in the ballpark, these guesses, so I'm going to leave it open for just a third guess.
Ooh.
34
from Mr. Bird. Final guess from Stokes. Can he convert for victory?
The goal is gaping. I'm going to say 40.
Ooh. That's like, I'd probably give that one in off the post because it was 39 touches.
Yes! Max arriving. Come on.
No messing. Just blows Bud out. Bud's got to go back into training. He's having a mare recently.
Clean sheet as well. Come on.
He used to be the king.
Stokes did a Peter Whiff there. He hit his shin in off the post from a yard out, didn't he? Nearly missed it.
They all count.
It's a shame we didn't go into a tiebreaker because that would have been Troy Deeney. Everybody's favourite player.
We didn't want to talk about him anyway, did we?
He got 45 touches against Villa.
Good for him to stick his 45 touches up his arse.
To be fair, I like the fact that he plays with the banter. I mean,
because he's all right, and he, I just
yeah and he's it. He comes across as a decent guy. He understands.
And he puts to be fair to him, he puts a shift in. Considering he's a lone striker, he puts himself about. He's one of those annoying players, isn't he? Most people would like that kind of player.
Yeah, but he's one of those players that only a team, you know, like your Watfords or whatever, would ever take a chance on him. You know, you'd never play for Manchester United or, you know, Liverpool or whatever.
No, well, Smith had him, didn't he, at Warsaw?
Yeah. I thought his gesture was quite funny. Even funnier was the video, I don't know if you saw it, or if you're in the lower Holt, what the lower Holt was saying to him.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. It was the barrage almost of abuse.
Almost running out of swear words to call him. I think somebody put the video up trying to get Villa fans done for racism, but the only racial thing said was labelling him a blue nose. Now, I don't know if that classes as racism.
Well, blue is a colour, David.
Well, there you go.
Sure, the barrage of abuse wasn't like aimed at our centre backs.
But no, I thought it was that was, you know, that's why you like football.
That's what it's all about.
That kind of rivalry, it's all good fun.
And it makes getting a last minute winner even better. We got the last kick of the game after all of that. And the time wasting, and you know, has their coach got home yet? By the way, or are they still taking their time?
That was dreadful. That's the worst I've ever seen. That time wasting. How the ref didn't do anything about it, I'll never know.
He's crap,
shocking.
Max.
Yeah.
It all adds to the drama, but as we said on the last show, John Terry gave the ball boys a little bit of called one up, told him to tell everybody else to speed up the game, put the ball straight in the Foster's hands, etc. And we can give credit to them for helping with the victory. So thank you very much again.
We did dedicate the last podcast to the Villa ball boys, didn't we?
We did indeed. Right, the final thank you very much to the My Old Man Said patrons. If you haven't signed up yet and have been thinking about it, please go to myomansaid.com and click on the patron link. Thank you also for signing up in the last week. Luke Waymer, Rob Warsfold, Craig Wright, Carmel Quinn, Ian Bruntlett, who returns. Thank you very much, Ian. Stuart Roberts, Tilly Tally Ho, that's what they want to be called as. Cameron Gordon, Judah Richards, and David Oakes. Thank you very much, guys, and welcome aboard. Also, Max Stakes knows a thing or two about merchandise. There is also some My Old Man Said mugs have been released after I've had a few samples just to make sure everything is in line. So do go to the My Old Man Said shop and check them out there. You can also get some discount if you're a patron in the top three tiers. So don't forget to put in the codes that have been sent to you. Actually, when you sign up as a patron, you might not have the code. So if you want a code, drop me a line if you're in the tiers, top three tiers. In the meantime, we must get out of here. Max Stokes has television to watch. Do check out his channel, Villa on Tour, and the budding channel, Max on Tour. I hear that both channels are massive in Tanzania.
Yeah, they actually are. I did a video on Samatta. The amount of Tanzanians in the comments saying, oh, that's our guy. And, you know, it was brilliant. I absolutely loved it.
We're all going on a summer holiday.
Yeah, pre-season, yeah. Tanzania.
I did mention this at the West Midlands Police Independent Advisory Group meeting. We had Kick It Out there, Anwar from Kick It Out, who used to play for West Ham back in the day, but great chap, really nice chap. And I was telling him about the issues with our new Egyptian fan base and how they attacked any LGBT references on the Villa Facebook group. So these new fans bring fresh challenges at times, but hopefully the Tanzanians won't be hostile to you, Mick.
Hope not.
But please do spread the word on the podcast and retweet it when you see it on Twitter and share it about. And if you know any other Villa sophisticated, intelligent, sexy fans, make sure you tell them about it and get them aboard. And also join the Mad Few Facebook group as well to continue the conversation throughout the week. We don't have idiots in there, do we, Chris? We make sure it's...
We don't, man. It's streamlined.
It's selective. People who believe... Well, people who know the reality of Villa and what this team is about and where we're going to. Anyway, thank you very much to Max and Chris for coming on the show again. And, we didn't talk about Leicester. Just in a nutshell, are we going to win, Max? Tell me, please.
Que sera, sera. That's all I'll say.
Chris?
Fuck yeah, we are.
Sorry, Max, I've got a confession to make. We bumped into Max in town, and I think we all got tickets on a certain deadline that popped up. But I've got a confession to make, Max.
Oh, you're not moving, are you?
A week later, I moved.
No, where are you going?
I wanted to go in the Holt. I was like, right, this is a semi-final. I looked in that block we were in, and there was like 350 seats empty. And I thought,
it's a funny one, that.
I thought, it's a semi-final. Everybody's going back to the normal places. But then I looked around and I thought, let's keep on the mood of doing something different. So I'm like sat behind the dugout almost. I'm going for match experience, sitting behind the Villa boys in the dugout.
Yeah, I tell you what a difference a last-minute goal brings. Because I checked online for someone else to get them a ticket the morning of the Watford game. Sorry, the Monday before. And there were about 6,500 empty seats for that game. Wow. Now there's about 1,000 left in a couple of days. So everyone all of a sudden is believing.
Yeah. And on that note, I'll see you, Max and Chris, in the centre circle Tuesday night. In the middle of the night, wrap up warm. It's going to be
bring
cold.
A cushion.
Bring a cushion, yeah. If Villa win that game, I'm going to do a competition for a My Old Man Said cushion. A My Old Man Said cushion, you say? I've got one.
Majestic.
I got it made for a laugh, and it's got like a velvet finish. And the cover of that My Old Man Said podcast, the Rolling Stones ripoff, it just fucking works as a cushion. It's unbelievable. So if we beat Leicester Tuesday night, there'll be a competition on the next show for one of them. Anyway, thank you very much, gents. And until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.